Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, finding their customers, their neighbors, their friends, the right insurance that fits your needs, whether it's auto, home, life, business, bundles. And they try very hard to find you the best price. And if there's ever a claim, they go to work as if it happened to them. Customer service means everything to Purdy Insurance. And from the Purdy family, which is a great family, and their great family of workers in the office there, happy Thanksgiving from you, from them to you. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dave Cicchini in a moment, but first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Handoff straight up the middle, and Penny is off to the races, 20, 15, 10, 5, he's in, touchdown Seahawks! He was shot out of a gun, Rashad Penny. From 58 yards out, takes it to the house. And if you can't chip away, why not blow up the entire stone? And that's what Rashad Penny just did. The Seahawks lead 16-3.
Steve Rabel with the call on the Seahawks radio network. And Steve, I know the feeling on the other side when Penn State played San Diego State, won the game. I think won the game like 39-18 or something like that. Rashad Penny took a kickoff back for a touchdown in that game. So I've seen the speed firsthand. All right. With that, we bring in Dave Cicchini, the head football coach at Bucknell. Dave, thanks so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right. You fall behind in this game, but then you score 14 second quarter points. You take a halftime lead. Was that the same resiliency you've been seeing down the stretch?
Oh, absolutely, really an incredible job by our defense. Both defensive touchdowns, one on a fumble return, one on an interception return, just single-handedly our defense kept us in that football game. We were moving the ball at times on offense, but we probably had one of our worst days from a ball security standpoint. Just couldn't hold on to the football. I think we had three fumbles on the day, a number of drop passes. Just we weren't clicking, and yet we went in with this lead. Our defense just doing a phenomenal job, stepping up time and time again. And then, of course, things, unfortunately, we just couldn't sustain that. We gave up some longer drives in the second half. But that first half was as good of a defensive performance as I've seen in a long time.
Along the way, Fordham had the ball 33 minutes. I mean, nobody ever wants to admit fatigue, but did you sense your defense with all that hard work was starting to tire a bit?
Well, I don't know if it was necessarily they started to tire. It's just that Fordham's offense, they have too many weapons that you knew. I mean, that this team had been able to get big plays versus everybody that they played all year long, but that they were prone to mistakes. And we were able to capitalize on the mistakes that they made, but it was just a matter of a time before they got loose, made some people miss in the open field. They just have too many talented running backs and too many talented receivers. So any time the ball gets into one of the hands of their playmakers, you know, you hold your breath for a little, and we didn't let anybody free really the entire first half. But the second half, a couple of times they got out and they caught us in some big plays. It was a good offense, and unfortunately, you know, with the way we were playing that first half, we just couldn't sustain it.
All right, you're going now. You've gone through a full season with this team, with this program. What surprised you, if anything, along the way with this?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said, along the way with this, what surprised you, if anything, in your first year in terms of what the state of the program happens to be?
Yeah. I think the biggest surprise was the resiliency of our program. You take over a team that went 1-10, and we started the season off with a tremendously difficult non-conference schedule, but we're sitting at 0-5. So these guys have lost, you know, how many of the, you know, at least, you know, 15 of their last 16 games. And nobody was hanging their head. Nobody was overly frustrated. Nobody was doubting what we were asking them to do on offense or defense or special teams. Really, from the seniors on down, they bought in and they were seeing the improvement. They knew that the wins were going to come. They just kept plugging away. And that was something, just as a head coach, just knowing going into it that, you know, before we ever played a game, you just look at Temple and Villanova and Princeton and all of these teams that had finished, you know, gone to bowl games or finished with the playoffs or undefeated. You knew it could be very, very rough. But, I give our players a lot of credit. They were resilient. They hung in there. We managed to continue to build off that momentum once we got into our league schedule.
All right, so now you're going to head into the off season, and heading into the off season, that also means at some point, I mean, obviously you've been recruiting the entire time, but I mean, FCS recruiting is a little bit different. But what are your to be the areas of need where you say, okay, now I need to build on my strength, and I need to upgrade someplace else? So what are those decisions right there?
Yeah, well, we need to recruit a really big class. Just numerically, this football team, we have to add depth at nearly every position. Now, the really cool thing about it is the seniors that we're losing, as good of guys as they are, very few actually started. You have Alex Peachin, our All-American punter. That's going to be a huge loss. Sam Chitty at linebacker, Chad Freshnock, who was a part-time starter at tailback. But most of our seniors that went into the season saying, hey, we're going to count on these guys for starters, most of them were hurt and weren't able to heal up, or they got hurt so early on in the season that we got used to playing ball games without them. So we are going out there. Our numbers are low in terms of depth, but the number of starters that we have returning, it's pretty amazing. I think we have 20 starters coming back, maybe 21, including our kicker. There's a lot of optimism here as we look at recruiting. It's getting that depth, going out and finding quality depth at nearly every position. But if I had to pick one right now, it would be the offensive line. We were banged up towards the end of the year. It really hurt us offensively. And we finished the season with 8 healthy bodies. And that's really, really scary to have numbers that low, and a couple of those healthy bodies were seniors who aren't coming back next year. So we've got some commitments, early commitments at the offensive line position, but when it's all said and done, that's going to be the area that we'll go out and find the most bodies.
You also, during the offseason, need players to step up as leaders as they go through the winter program. Or a couple of guys that you just look at and you say, you know what, I'll be able to count on that guy. When I'm not around, he'll lead.
I think there's a bunch. I think we've got a lot of really strong leaders coming back within the program. I would hope that while we have a number of guys that just naturally have already stepped up, I think Rick Mottram as our middle linebacker has just been an unbelievable guy. He floats a little bit underneath the radar because Simeon Page is our playmaker at linebacker, but Rick is just so solid, and he's really stepped up his leadership, and I would hope he would continue to take another step forward. I would hope our quarterback, Logan Bitticoffer, who was a little bit more on the quieter side but really improved and played some really good football at times for us this year, I would hope he would start to be more vocal. And then Brandon Sanders, you know, that's our playmaker on offense, a guy who unfortunately was really not available for 3 of our games this year, but when he was out there, he's as good of a difference maker as we have, and he has excellent leadership qualities to him as well. So we've got a lot of guys. I think the leadership in the off season is going to be key, and my certainly knowing a lot more about this football team in this off season than I did just coming on board in middle of February earlier on this year. It's going to be night and day for me knowing exactly, you know, who I can really look forward to and really push to open up and be a more vocal leader.
Everybody, Dave, has to have their own personality, obviously. Everybody has their own personality. But the really, really good quarterbacks I've been around really embrace being the quarterback. They wake up that day, they feel like they're the quarterback. They sit down, they want to watch tape. They sit down, even how they carry themselves to class, they're the quarterback. How they're out in the field, they carry it. Does Logan have that kind of personality? It's just a quieter one, but he has that personality of what a quarterback needs to be?
Yeah, I think you hit it exactly perfectly. I mean, he's a guy a little bit more on the quieter side, at least when he's around the coaches. I think he's a little bit of a higher rep guy than most, where he just really, to feel comfortable about something, he needs to master that and take a couple more snaps at that. But he's a competitor. I mean, you watch the kid, and I've been around him enough to see, you know, I've bowled with him, and the guy wants to win at bowling and has talent, and I've seen him on the golf course, and he is a great golfer, and he just has that competitive vibe to him, and all great quarterbacks do. You know, when I was coaching Ryan Fitzpatrick at Harvard, that was the thing that impressed me the most. I watched this guy try to win every sprint. It didn't matter what you were doing. You know, he wanted to be the best at whatever he was doing, and I see that in Logan as well. And I do. I expect that leadership to come because I know he's a lot more confident now than he was just a month ago or 2 months ago earlier on in the season. And with that confidence, I think he's going to have more of a vocal presence this coming year. At least I certainly hope so.
Well, Dave, season number one in the books. We can't thank you enough for the time, your valuable time that you gave to us and to this program. It's meant a lot to us, and I know you're off to a really great start. Thanks so much for everything.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. You take care.
Dave Cicchini, head football coach at Bucknell. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome. Great to have you with us on the show. The Senior Day honorees, player-wise, there'll be 16 of them on Saturday at Beaver Stadium. Nick Bowers, Cam Brown, Weston Carr, Dan Chisenhut, Nick Urie, Blake Gilligan, Stephen Gonzalez, Jan Johnson, Hunter Kelly, Colton Maxwell, John Reed, Michael Schuster, Garrett Taylor, Justin Tobin, Robert Windsor, and Jake Zembeck. Those will be the 16 that will be honored on Saturday at Beaver Stadium. The Rutgers story coming into this one, it looks like Raheem Blackshear, who was going to redshirt, right? Now here's the interesting. Blackshear's played four games this year, four, which means he has not played the last seven. Do you realize he still leads Rutgers in receiving? He's missed the last seven games, and he still leads the team in receiving. Evidently, he's put his name into the portal. They're also now, I mean, Rutgers is now trying to get ahead of the story on Greg Schiano. And they've put out what was offered and what was demanded. Now, what is consistent is that the story on the Schiano side is the same, 8 years and $32 million. Okay, so that's not in dispute. That's what Greg wanted. I mean, it sounded like Rutgers was willing to go that way, too. Now, NJ.com has done a great job of reporting on this. I mean, not a good job, doing a great job of reporting on this. This has been their baby. There's a 3-week process. Many expected he'd be rehired. It said that Schiano, according to the person with knowledge of the negotiations, said Schiano acquiesced on several key issues in negotiations. It did not change any requests following his initial meeting with Rutgers. But in the end, the two sides could not come to an agreement. They said the negotiations started to drag and then eventually collapsed. Rams offensive assistant Jed Fish, who had formerly been at Michigan, and Michigan linebacking coach Anthony Campanelli, whose brother right now is the interim head coach, have emerged as the top candidates. But supposedly, he wanted a better practice facility. I cannot blame him there. Right now, they have a bubble. That's okay. But he wanted a better practice facility. He wanted more money for staff. He wanted $7.7 million for staff, assistants, and you need a recruiting staff. That was part of it. He also, according to one story, it was Scott Politi's story in NJ.com, is that he went in there with a roster, put the roster down, and started going through with a mark, saying, no, 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 yeah, 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 no, 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 yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were shocked by the number of guys he didn't want to keep. You know, all those people in the room, no offense, you've been to all the games, correct? All right, here's the story from NJ.com. Turns out all these years later, okay, let's see. Schiano, according to multiple sources familiar with the November 5th meeting between the two sides, came armed with a scouting report of the current roster that stunned people in the room and a list of more than 100 potential targets in the transfer portal to jumpstart the rebuild. He had already started recruiting behind the scenes to salvage the 2020 class that, according to them, looks like a hopeless cause now. What a mess. Now, whether they can get facilities or not there, I don't know. I don't know what their financial base is. I don't know. It's not like, for example, Northwestern went from having possibly, well, let's just say, Northwestern had among the worst. Bucknell won today over Seattle, 77-70. Good win. Good win for Nathan and those guys down in Orlando. Northwestern went from having among the worst facilities in the Big Ten to now having state-of-the-art. But again, they're a private school. They have a deep donor financial base that goes beyond sports. You look at some of the graduates of Northwestern over the years. I mean, there's some cash. I don't know if Rutgers has that kind of base or not. If I said something, I'd only be guessing. And you know me, I don't like to guess. Because I think it's wrong. I just think it's wrong for you people driving in cars and listening at home or listening at work to have somebody on the air guessing for you. And we talk about things that we know about. But supposedly, if they wanted a new facility, all their new facilities would probably be in the neighborhood of $100 to $150 million. You know, do they have the kind of donor base that can do that? I mean, they might, because obviously they've got part of their donor base is certainly in the New York City area. They might be able to. I just don't know. But that's a lot of cash to put in. Now, if they're going to look at Nunzio Campanelli's brother, if they're going to look at Jed Fish, I mean, you have to have somebody in that job that has head coaching experience. I think going after a glorified assistant, I mean, you have to know what it's like to sit in that chair. You have to know the decisions that have to be made in that chair. You have to know the economics of sitting in that chair. You have to know all of that, especially with this job. But as the old saying goes, that's their problem. That's their problem. It's not our problem. That's their problem. Okay? Penn State's trying to win its 41st game in the last 4 years. I know Saturday was tough, but Penn State's got a gem in James Franklin. I mean, Penn State's got its gem in James Franklin. And believe me, I strongly, strongly believe that this guy can get you to the promised land. I don't just kind of think it. I strongly believe it, that he can get, I mean, to get them this far has been remarkable. Now the front, now you're all frustrated that they're not quite over the that hurdle yet. Imagine how you felt 4 years ago. That's what Rutgers is looking for. Penn State's got its gem. Rutgers is desperate to find somebody that can get them to respectability, not just a gem.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back on this Monday. It is great to have you with us on this Thanksgiving week, and always thankful to be joined by someone I consider not just a colleague, but a good friend, Rich Scarcello. Rich, welcome.
Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing well, and I hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you.
As to how it played out on Saturday, Rich, what were your thoughts in watching the 3 hours and 20 minutes play out?
Well, there were a lot of thoughts. Obviously, Ohio State was on the verge of making the game a rout. Obviously, Justin Fields' fumble going into the end zone in the first half helped Penn State stay in it. And Lamont Wade, tip of the cap to him for the first of his three forced fumbles.
Yeah.
But I was extremely impressed with Justin Fields, not only as a runner but as a passer. I thought, as I tweeted, I think, during the game, I don't know what Georgia was seeing, because the Georgia coaches weren't seeing the same thing that I'm seeing today. I thought he put the ball right on the numbers, led receivers when he needed to give them a chance to get extra yards. Touchdown pass to K.J. Hill was just tremendous, because Penn State had really good coverage on it. And then Penn State. I mean, you can't say it enough. Down 21-0. There have been other times, other Penn State teams that have been down 21-0 at Ohio Stadium and have just collapsed, mm-hmm. and they didn't, and this team didn't. And it, to me, it revealed a lot about them that maybe we didn't see in the first 10 games. I mean, I know they came from behind to make it a close game at Minnesota, but to nearly climb out of a 21-point hole in the second half against the number two team in the country was impressive. So that's my quick couple takes.
Right. Yeah, the two Fields throws to Hill and Olave, I thought were NFL throws.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those were NFL throws. And, the coverage was decent on both, but the throws were tremendous, Rich.
Yes. Yeah. I would be extremely surprised if he was not a top 10 draft pick when he comes out.
Yeah. I want to get to Chase Young for a moment. Chase Young is getting, and justifiably, anytime you have four tackles for losses and three sacks, you're going to get a lot of publicity.
Sure.
But you and I both sat there. It was on three series. The other nine series, I thought Penn State did a really good job on him on the other nine series of the game. But when he had to make some plays, I thought he didn't. He's a special talent.
Yeah. I mean, he'll talk to several fellow beat writers, and I don't even care. Unless there's a quarterback out there in the spring who is guaranteed to play 15 years and to be in the Hall of Fame,
right?
I would take Chase Young number one. I don't care if I would need a quarterback. He'd be my number one pick.
I agree.
And he was extremely impressive. And Penn State did a decent job of neutralizing him. And I'm saying this, I will say this. I mean, the one sack that he got credit for, he fell on Will Levis after fumbling the snap. That was a home scoring decision. Okay.
Sure, I understand.
But he's a tremendous, tremendous player. Yeah. And seeing him in person again, boy, he's very, very special. And I think he's going to have a terrific NFL career.
The performance of Will Levis, and in two parts. Number one, the performance of Will Levis, considering the circumstances he stepped into, but also the job of James Franklin and Ricky Ronnie for tailoring a package of plays that fit Will Levis's skill set.
Well, you know, I agree. Will Levis should get all the credit in the world for the way to come into that game in down 21-0 in the middle of a series, and helped lead Penn State to 17 points against the number one defense in the country was very, very impressive. And you mentioned the play calling. James mentioned it after the game, and they had to. I mean, Will Levis doesn't have, of course, he's a redshirt freshman. Doesn't have as many options. You don't have as many options with him as you do with Sean Clifford.
Right.
I'm not trying to criticize him. It's just the fact he's playing for the first time in a very, very meaningful situation.
Right.
So to do that, yeah. I mean, did he make a mistake with the interception to Freiermuth? Yeah, of course. He was the first one to admit it after the game. But I don't think you could have expected more than he gave you.
Right.
I mean, he literally almost led you to a 21-21 tie if Journey Brown holds on to the ball inside the 5-yard line. I mean, really, that's he did a terrific job.
As you watch Journey Brown week in and week out, what are you seeing out of Journey Brown that takes you on a path with him to even bigger and better things?
Okay, on the long drive home yesterday, I brought this up with a few of the other B writers. What I see from Journey Brown, number one, is tremendous growth. He has exceeded my expectations, and I'm guessing the expectations of a lot of people. I did not think, I didn't see this coming, this kind of production. I'm so impressed with him. He's not only strong, well, we know he's fast, but he's not only fast, he's strong. On that 18-yard touchdown run, he probably broke four tackles.
Yeah.
And I am very, very happy for him because he didn't know, you know, a year ago, he didn't know what kind of situation he was going to be in. And he has emerged clearly as the number one running back for Penn State.
Yeah. Defensively, the performance of Lamont Wade.
Steve, when you haven't, there's only, I think it's, he was the sixth player since 2000, sixth FBS player since 2000 to force three fumbles and recover one in a game. That was a special performance. And, you know, that's just going to give him more and more confidence. He, like you said, he gave up the touchdown pass to Hill, but I mean, Hill, it was a dime. It was a, you know, it was right on the money. But the second half he had was outstanding. I mean, Penn State's defense, I think they held Ohio State to about 150 or 160 yards in the second half.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that you can't ask for more than that. You really can't from a defense. And, you know, like I said, I think that the Lions revealed a lot about themselves, and something that we had not seen before, that they managed to make that, to almost tie the game and make it a four-quarter game.
It'll be Senior Day Saturday at Beaver Stadium when Penn State takes on Rutgers. And one of the guys that certainly will be focused on by many is somebody from your area. That's Jan Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about his road.
Well, most diehard Penn State fans know this, but I'll say it. I mean, Jan was, how do I put this? I compare him to when Joe Madden was in high school and I was a kid growing up in Hazleton. Like, Jan Johnson at Governor Mifflin High School in Shillington, just outside Reading, was the man. I mean, he was quarterback, defensive back on the football team, the leader, four-year starter, and he was a two-time state wrestling champion.
Right.
I mean, he was the guy. I mean, you talk to people. I also cover high school baseball. And you talk to anybody from Governor Mifflin, and they cannot talk enough about what a great young man that Jan Johnson is.
That's right.
They can't. And he's, Steve, I think he's had a very, very good year. And honestly, I was disappointed for him that he wasn't one of the three finalists for the Burlsworth Trophy.
Oh, I agree with you. First of all, you're talking about a guy that's a two-year starter.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, Rich, you know, and Jack Ham has talked about this, so I'll use his words. You don't need my words.
Mm-hmm.
He says, look, he's the glue to that defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much of a price you can put on a guy that's your glue?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think he's had a very, very good year. And I mean, he's probably not happy with it because that's the kind of personality he has.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope he gets an opportunity to play professionally. But if he doesn't, I think he would make just a tremendous coach. And Brent Pry has said that, and James Franklin has said that.
Well, I'll tell you one. He pulled Joe Lorig aside one day, and he said to him, he says, at Memphis, whatever spot it is, this, and this. And Lorig looked at him and said, have you looked at every film? He goes, yes.
Yeah.
He goes, it's like you get blown away when somebody is that dedicated to their craft.
Yeah, and I did forget to say he has 2 degrees already. He's already earned 2 degrees, by the way.
Oh, I mean, it 2 degrees along the way. And he's from an absolute pure Penn State family. Mm-hmm. He could have gone someplace else, and he elected to walk on here. When you've talked to him, why did he end up, was it all the Penn State connections that made him walk on here? Why did he walk on here when he could have maybe gone to, I don't know, East Stroudsburg? Let's pick James Franklin's East Stroudsburg.
Right, right. I mean, he was, I'm drawing a blank. Was it Hofstra? I can't remember. He had an FCS opportunity.
Right.
And, he wanted to challenge himself at the highest level he could. And obviously the Penn State tradition in his family had something to do with it. But once he got this opportunity to play at Penn State, even as a preferred walk-on, he took it, and he's run with it. I mean, he's team captain has started now, what are we at, 24 consecutive games?
Yeah.
I'm happy for him because he's a guy, he doesn't draw attention to himself. He doesn't like talking about himself.
Right.
And he's had a very, very fine Penn State career, an outstanding career, I would say.
Well, I mean, people don't realize. Could he punt? Yes.
Yes.
Could he be the long snapper?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Along with being the linebacker and the heavyweight wrestling guy, and he could be all of that.
And he was at one time the scout team tight end 2 years ago.
Yes, he was. He was the scout team tight end a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Now, when they went to Michigan and had that tough game in 2016,
yeah,
he got hurt in that game.
Yes.
which meant Penn State was down to their fifth middle linebacker at that point. He got hurt in that game. What did it take for him to get back? And was it essentially the same kind of dedication he throws into the craft every day?
Yeah, there was no doubt in my mind, knowing what I know about him, you know, that he was going to come back. And he, you know, obviously he tore his ACL, and you know, he came back and contributed in 17 on the special teams. He made every road trip, and he like when there were injuries, he was asked to play tight end on scout team.
Yeah.
And he did. He didn't say, "I don't know." He did. He just said, "Okay. Where do you want me to go?" I mean, he's a very very unique guy. And he was as good as anybody, probably better than anybody after the Minnesota game.
Yeah.
And what he had to say about, "Look, you know, we didn't play well enough to win, but we got a lot to play for yet. And we've got to prepare right away," and he was right, and they did, and you know, yeah, Jan, I could talk about Jan all day,
yeah, no question. The Rutgers situation, Greg Schiano has said no, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see Steve Politi's article on NJ.com.
I have not seen it, but I can imagine what he had to say.
Oh, it's interesting. Essentially, they were talking about an 8-year, $32 million contract. Okay,
yes.
That part was not really in dispute. I guess he wanted better facilities.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted more money for staff, right? You know, across the board, because you need recruiting staff, things like that.
Yeah.
And I believe, what was the other one? Oh, I guess he walked in with the roster and basically put a black mark through everybody that he didn't want back. And I guess that there was hardly any light areas of the paper left because there were so many black marks on the paper, and I guess they were shocked when they saw that.
Yeah, well, what I read briefly yesterday, and I didn't get a chance to read Steve's column, and what I read, I did see he said if they don't want to be a big time program, then they might as well go back to playing Lehigh and Lafayette.
Right. Yeah, that's how it started. Yep.
Yeah. Well, what I read is that that he did receive a 8-year offer of $32 million, and he wanted a new practice facility because they have a bubble,
right?
You know, an indoor facility. Sure, I get it.
Yep.
And he wanted a football building. I get it. If you want to win, okay. And I guess they said no, and then he countered with, "Well, I need to increase the salaries for the assistant coaches." And they said no. Now, I don't know if that's what Steve had.
Right.
But the bottom line is, Steve, where do they go from here?
Exactly.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. I'll say this. I do have one opinion about the job. I mean, it's totally unsolicited. They would never ask me in a million years. I do think you need a head coach.
Right? I think that's the word that I'm hearing. Right.
And not an assistant.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I apologize for interrupting you.
No, that's what I'm hearing, that they're looking for somebody with head coaching experience. I know his name has been mentioned, but I don't see Joe Moorhead leaving Mississippi State to take the Rutgers job.
No.
Do you?
No.
I just don't see that.
I don't see it, especially after just 2 years there.
Yeah.
I think you've got a better chance to compete there than competing with this job.
Yes, for sure. So who do you get? Is it going to be Butch Jones? Is it going to be Brett Bielema? Is it going to be the interim coach whose last name, even as an Italian, I can't pronounce?
Nunzio Campanelli.
His brother, who's on the staff at Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where you go.
Do you look at, for example, do you turn to FIU? Which just beat Miami of Florida, and see if Butch Davis is interested.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, you're not going to get somebody on the rise necessarily to take this job because it is a tough job.
Yeah, it is.
And it needs an overhaul, and I get what Greg Schiano was getting at, if these stories are true, I get what he what he wanted. He wanted them to make a real commitment.
Right.
And doesn't look like they wanted to do that.
Sums it up perfectly. Rich,
yeah.
To you and your family, happy Thanksgiving. Just great people, great family, and I hope you have a great time on Thursday, and I look forward to seeing you Saturday.
Steve, same to you. My pleasure is always being on the program. Thanks a lot.